You are listening to the Cycling Podcast, at the Tour de France in association with RAFA, the fastest closing in a world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with RAFA in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam. Stage 11, today we're in Toulouse.
Where are we, Lionel?
We are in the Place du Capitole in Toulouse. Very busy square with lots of restaurants and bars on one side, and on the other side, the Capitolium. François, do you know what that is?
Yeah, it used to be the seat of the local administration. They Toulouse was a very powerful county in the Middle Ages, and they had their own rulers, quite independent from the French king or the king of Spain, because he was in between, and they had their own parliament, and this parliament was the Capitole.
It's a very grand building. So that was the parliament in there, was it?
Yeah, that's where all the decisions were made at the time. And also on that square, not far from here, you have the Toulouse Opera, which was also quite famous in his time. But yeah, the Capitole was really the place where all the decisions in Toulouse and in the county of Toulouse were made. So the seat of power in the city, so, and a huge square which was kind of a forum, and that's still the place where the Toulousains celebrate when their rugby union team wins the French, which they did this year, the rugby union championship, or what might happen a couple of times when they won the European Cup. Rugby, this is the French capital of rugby.
Rugby's big here. I mean, as if to prove that they're part of the Republic now, I count over 100 French flags on the front of the building.
Absolutely.
There's
French flag shop.
Yeah, actually at the front on you have three flags, the European flag, the French flag, and the other one is the region. It's now called Occitania.
Well. Well, we're certainly, we're on the edge of the Pyrenees, aren't we now? And we head into the Pyrenees tomorrow. It was a sprint stage today, last one for a while. Until Nîmes, perhaps next week. And it was won by Caleb Ewan. The honours being shared, really. Another different stage winner today. Tale of the attack, please, Lionel.
Yeah, well,
is that it? Was that it?
Caleb Ewan won.
That happened.
Yeah, let's not spoil the tale of the attack.
Oh, sorry.
I mean, I'm sure the listeners know who won the stage of the Tour de France before they listen to the podcast. But I was just thinking earlier today, the last time the Tour had a stage finish in Toulouse was 2008. Mark Cavendish won in the rain, and it just, realizing that made me feel quite old. I mean, that's 11 years ago now, and Cavendish was riding his second Tour, and the first one where he was winning multiple stages and announcing himself as the new sprint sensation.
We've been to Toulouse since then. Has that been for stage starts?
Yeah, there was a start in Blagnac a few years back at the airport.
And Blagnac is the airport town. There's been a start as well from a town really close to the Muret, is one of the, was a start, I think, and is pretty close to Toulouse as well. So we're never far, but as such, you're right, it's been 11 years ago.
Well, we came from Albi at just after lunchtime today. 167 kilometres brought them to Toulouse, and the break contained four riders: Anthony Perez and Stefan Rossetto of Cofidis, Lilian Calmejean of Total Direct Energy, and Aimé de Gendt of Wanty-Gobert. Rossetto now has spent more kilometres out in front at the Tour de France this year than any other rider. The break, as we've seen throughout the race, was allowed a little bit of headway, but not too much. They were unlikely to really make it all the way to the finish. And the race really sort of burst into life in the final 30 kilometres when there was a crash which has taken Calmejean's teammate Nicky Terpstra out of the race. He was the rider who came off worst in the fall. Richie Porte, Mike Woods and Nairo Quintana were in a group that had to chase back. And Giulio Ciccone, who was riding high on GC last week, lost quite a lot of time. The break all split up when De Gendt accelerated on a small climb, and Rossetto showed his annoyance, waving his arm, whether he thought they should cooperate a bit more, because the gap was still holding up okay. I mean, I thought they had less than no chance of actually making it to the finish. Rossetto maybe thought that perhaps there was more chance of getting to the line or getting closer to the line, but De Gendt accelerated away, and he's used to time trialing on his road bike, isn't he, because he did that in the team time trial back in Brussels, and he adopted an aero position and managed to stay out there until just inside the final 5 kilometres, and then we saw the sprint finish we were expecting, and as Richard said, a first Tour de France stage win for Australian Caleb Ewan, riding for Lotto Soudal. Notably, his lead-out man, or his normal lead-out man, Jasper de Buist, he went off the road and crashed with around 10 or 11 kilometres to go, and that meant that Roger Kluger then had to take Ewan all the way up to Dylan Groenewegen's back wheel, and then Ewan did the rest without a conventional lead-out. He has now completed a set, winning a stage of all 3 Grand Tours. This is his first Tour de France, and he, by my reckoning, there are 6 riders who've won their first Tour de France stage in this tour. Overall, no change really. Julian Alaphilippe takes the yellow jersey into the Pyrenees tomorrow, and the stage goes over the Perisord and the Orquet d'Ancizan and descends down into Bagnères de Bigorre. So that was stage 11.
Maybe a quick word about the breakaway, because I mean, we won't talk a lot about it because it was quite predictable. It was even more predictable. I mean, for once, it's always difficult to find who's going to be on the breakaway, but in this breakaway was quite of limpid, because Rossetto has been in every breakaway almost since the start of the tour. De Gendt is named De Gendt, so being the other De Gendt, he had to break away in turn. Then Lilian Calmejean is from Albi, and Anthony Perez is from Toulouse. Oh. So, I mean, there was no way out.
The fastest closing in a world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam.
Thank you very much to Rafa, our headline sponsor. Very grateful to them for their support. Lara Messiger of Eurosport, met her at the finish of the day, and she recited my Rafa message for me because she's so used to hearing it in the podcast, she said. I said, would you like to record it and we'll play it in the next episode? But she declined that invitation. I have to mention the latest EF Gone Racing film. It's not from the Tour de France. I watched it this morning. It's quite long. It's over half an hour long. It's the GB Giro 2019, and it follows Lachlan Morton as he rode from Land's End to John O'Groats. Quite a lot of it off-road, a very unusual route. This was an insane challenge, and it's a fantastic film. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Really recommend it. You can go to rafa.cc or the Rafa channel on YouTube to watch that. It's, part of their alternative calendar this year. This is really quite different, and a fascinating insight into, I guess, Lachlan Morton's capacity to hurt himself and suffer, and it's quite poignant. Watch it, it's really good. I've been telling Lionel about it today. He'll watch it soon, I'm sure. Back to the Tour de France, though, a more conventional bike race. And today was a pretty conventional stage, wasn't it? A transition stage taking us to the gateway to the Pyrenees, and the real action begins with a tricky but not overly challenging stage tomorrow, and then the time trial, of course. So the GC action is about to really kick off. And today, as I said earlier, the stages are being shared quite evenly at the moment around the sprinters in particular. What's interesting is I spent the afternoon in the NTT truck. Now, that's the company formerly known as Dimension Data, working with all the data from the race. And they've got a machine that predicts the winner every day, based purely on data from the last 6 years. That was for an episode of Kilometer Zero, by the way, which we'll hear in a couple of days. But the machine was a very strong prediction today for Caleb Ewan. 17% chance of him winning today. Groenewegen was on 6%, Peter Sagan was on 5%, Viviani was on 2%. I was surprised to see that. But the machine takes into it. The machine, I mean, I should say in the interest of fans that the machine often does get it wrong, because there are a lot of variables that it can't factor in, such as crosswinds the other day. But today it
I got it wrong.
Today there's a machine. I did an interview with the machine that we just heard there. But the I was surprised to see Caleb Ewan such a strong favourite. But it factored in things like the finish, the way that it was slightly downhill, it was very fast. And you know, based on all his results over the last 6 years or so, it predicted him as the winner, and it was right.
There is a phenomenon that I think we mentioned last year already, but Caleb Ewan is really the type of sprinter I'm going to talk about. Is it the end of you know, lead out trains? I mean, okay, Dylan Groenewegen and Jumbo Visma still have still use this kind of tactics, but on the Tour this year there's very few trains. And
there's one lead out tram, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a lead out tram. I actually talked to Greipel this morning on at the start, and he was adamant that it's funny when they try to be nice, the guys to their teammates, but he made it clear he doesn't have a lead out train and not even a tram. I mean, it's not even a moped. I mean, he has to fend for himself, and he said my only chance is to take the right wheel, and I made the wrong choices so far. But Caleb Ewan is the same type of sprinter. He doesn't need it needs his teammates to put him in the wheel of someone else and then over take this guy, but he doesn't need a lead out train, and lead out trains seem to be coming out of fashion, since Kittel is not there, since Cavendish is not there. I mean, we have a new type of sprinters who obviously don't need a train to win a stage.
Well, sorry to go back to the lead out tram, but Arkea Samsic, the trams that you get in Lisbon, which are just one carriage, they're kind of operating a bit like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, your tram is nice.
But Warren Barguil could have been a great lead out man today.
He beat Greipel in the sprint.
Yeah,
I think,
Warren
today.
Barguil was 10th. That's unbelievable. And we also see this year a very strange thing. Lead out guys more than often finish in front of the guy they were supposed to lead out to the sprint. We had, again, in the results today, we have the case with Christophe finishing behind his lead out guy.
On Ewan, I mean, remember last year when he was with Mitchelton Scott? Do you remember Richard R. event in London with Matt White, who, when he more or less said that Ewan would be in the Tour de France team, didn't he? And then, very close to the Tour de France, they left him out, choosing to go with a Yates-led GC strategy instead, and Ewan was really not happy about that and has moved to Lotto Soudal. He's so far had 3 third places and a second place before today, so he's been close but not managed to get over the line first. I think beaten by somebody different each time, but he's been knocking on the door, as they say. And today, maybe the fact that he didn't have a lead out man forced him to sort of think, well, this is down to me and me alone, and I've just got to do my best. Almost a scenario where there's nothing to lose, because...
Nothing to lose.
Oh, he did it. I'll be damned.
But, 25 years old, he's won stages in all 3 Grand Tours, and as he said in the press conference after the stage... it's not been an easy build up to the Tour for him, because he became a father around about a month or so before the Tour, and his baby daughter was in hospital right up to the time when he left to come to the Tour. So he's had other things going on in his mind, and yet has come here and has performed well and got over the line first today.
And his team are having a great Tour. The team that came here to win stages, and they've won 2 in the first 11.
But how much of that is down to the fact that De Koenig do something, so Lotto Soudal have to do something, and so De Koenig could do something? There is that rivalry. I know they play it down, but when De Koenig have the yellow jersey and a stage win and another stage win so early, it does put some pressure on the other Belgian team to be present in the race.
The Lotto Soudal strategy it was announced from the start, was really to have stage hunters, and they did, with Thomas De Gendt winning the stage, Tim Wellens going for the polka dot jersey, Richard talked to Roger Klug, his teammate, and I talked to John Lelong. But it's really that strategy. Tish Benoot came very close to winning the stage himself. Now they have, Ewan did it. So they actually, they've been true to their word. Yeah, which is interesting in itself. I mean, for once, a team coming and saying our goal is to win stages, they actually deliver.
Well, only six teams have won stages at this tour, though there's been a different winner of each stage. You know, there are some teams doing very well. You mentioned I spoke to Roger Kluger at the finish, Francois, and you spoke to John Lelong, the general manager at Lotto Soudal. Let's hear first from Kluger and then from John Lelong.
Oh, it's a big achievement. We were looking for this already last year, going to the tour and going for the stage. He took a win in the Vuelta, he took a win in the Giro in the past, and two stage wins in the Giro this year. So we knew he's definitely ready on the level to contend amongst the other sprinters. And he was already close when he finished second. So we always knew, we could see he had it in his legs. He definitely is one of the fastest, and if he time his sprint to perfection, then he can win. And he done it right this today. We are super, super happy. We came here to win one stage. Now we have two. We have still the jersey with Tim. It has been a fantastic tour so far, and everything was comes after now. It's still something extra. To find a column that was not there anymore, but the last 15 was pretty excited because it was caught behind the crash. He lost there many, many positions. And then I waited for him, and I got him back on his wheel, probably with 10K to go. And from there, we had to move on again, move up. Of course, he was on the limit, so sometimes we need to rest a little bit. And then lucky that little climb was 5K to go, they didn't took it that full. And from there, after I dropped him in the downhill, or I brought him up to the jumbo train, kept him there for another kilometer till the last two. And then I was gone, I was over, and he kept the position and done obviously a perfect sprint.
How well as a team did you know the finish? Because this was maybe slightly different to other finishes. Did you know it quite well?
Of course, everybody does this recons before on the screen television. Going to Google Street View or even have some videos. So we knew it would be a fast finish, super fast from the big roads, not big corners, just the 2K to go turner, but even this was a super fast one. And we knew that's a crucial point to be in position. And as I said, I dropped him there, I don't know, top 10, top 8 next to in the jumbo train. And that was obviously enough. From there, I don't know, I didn't saw the final of any team moved up after this point, but probably not.
John, victory by Caleb at last, which, I mean, first tour, we know how gifted he is, and now it's kind of a crowning for him.
Yeah, but you know, we were confident. We know that since Brussels, he was there. Third place. So when you have a rider with every sprint four times in a row on the top three, you say, okay, he has the legs, he's a specific sprinter, he has to find a good wheel. Once he's on the good wheel, we have to wait for the final meters, and then he has to make his acceleration. And today he chose a good wheel, and he was the strongest one. With a day which was not easy, because at the end, with a crash at 10 to go, he was a little bit blocked there, but at least everybody was bringing him in the right position.
Because Caleb is a specific sprinter. He's not just in the train. He's kind of he needs his own forces, actually, and shows the right wheel.
Yeah, because he doesn't need a lead-out. He just needs to be on the right wheel on the right moment, so at depending on the finish at 2 or 1.5 kilometer of the finish. Once he's in the good wheel, he prefers to be like this. Working with a train with him doesn't make any sense.
How important was the team spirit? At the stage win already, team in the pocket of the jersey. I mean, it's nearly perfect.
Yeah, it will be perfect in Paris when we'll have even more victories, maybe a jersey, we'll stay in the breakaway, being combative every day. You know, the tour is far away from being finished. Tomorrow is another battle, and we consider every stage like a classic, and happen what happen.
We get into the mountains, change of pace, change of terrain. What are your hopes there?
Of course, breakaway is going. Looking if we can defend the polka dot jersey, it will not be easy with the double points on the all category climbs in some of the finishes. But I think that the breakaway, and we know that we have a few guys like Tish Benoit, Thomas, Tim, who wants to be there and be sure that we will be there.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, Cycling Podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
Well, that's a reminder from Seb Piquet, race radio at the Tour de France, to tell us that we're powered from here to Paris by the Watt Bike Atom. And, Richard, let's hear you in action on the Watt Bike Atom. Listeners, are you ready for this?
So my session's finished, and I've had an email from What Bike with a summary of what happened. It was 40 minutes 30 seconds long. I covered 21.02 kilometers. Don't forget the 02. Average cadence 90, average power 210, maximum power 719, maximum cadence 188. Now, PES, I didn't know what this meant, so I looked it up, and it's pedaling effectiveness score. It's all about efficient pedaling, as the name suggests, measuring the power put through the whole stroke, down, up, around. And I need to understand what these scores mean, whether they're good or bad, I don't know at the moment, but my average 35, left average 42, right average 28. So quite a discrepancy there. And leg balance, however, left 47%, right 53%. It's fascinating to me because I had a hip replacement on my right leg 8 years ago now. And a lot of time after that was spent trying to rebalance the legs. There'd been a lot of muscle wastage in that right leg, which had previously been my dominant leg. So it suggests that in terms of strength and so on, I'm back to equal just about, but there's something going on with my pedaling stroke with my right leg. So I'll look into that. Very interesting though.
Rich, pedaling effectiveness score was a new one for me when I experienced a Watt Bike Atom. Was it something you were aware of?
Not at all. This was, really interesting. And I was very keen to understand more about what it meant. This sort of data is just was just not available at all 20 years ago, obviously. It's just fascinating to understand how all these aspects can go into improving your performance on a bike, including the sort of balance between your right leg and your left leg. That too was really, really interesting. As I mentioned in the clip, I had a hip replacement a few years ago and, did a lot of work around that time to rebalance the right leg and the left leg, and then you kind of forget about it and you think that's that done now, I'm sorted. So I was fascinated a few years on to get this sort of information.
I'm tempted to be facetious and ask, do you think
never.
You'd have been a better cyclist if you'd had this kind of information at your fingertips 20 odd years ago?
Well, that's a really interesting question. We're maybe going to hear a little bit about that in a future episode.
Well, we'll certainly be hearing from Dr. Barney Wainwright of What Bike in the next episode of our little mini-series with What Bike.
Well, he came up with the PES, the pedaling effectiveness score. So, yeah, he's got really interesting insight into how it's measured, what it means.
Well, he's the man to hear from about the pedaling effectiveness score. If you want to buy a Watt Bike Atom, you can do so at wattbike.com/TCP100. And if you buy before the end of July, you can get £100 of Sigma Sport vouchers by using the code TCP100. That's TCP and the number 100.
Well, we had a rest day yesterday, of course, but we've been picking over, I suppose, what happened on Monday in the crosswinds and the damage done in that stage. And one of the real losers that day was George Bennett, the Jumbo Visma rider, who was, I think, fourth overall, wasn't he, at the start
of
that stage?
He was, yeah, absolutely.
So, there was a possibility of him picking up the yellow jersey at some point, perhaps tomorrow, had he remained in that position. So he lost a lot of time. Apparently through his own error, he went back for bottles, and you spoke to him at the start today, Francois.
Yeah, I was with Seb Piquet, the voice of the Tour de France, whom we know very well, and yeah, we had a little chat, and obviously we couldn't help asking him about what happened 2 days ago and whether he was frustrated or not. Charles is a very nice, polite man. He couldn't really say, he was devastated, because that the same day his teammate Wout van Aert won the stage. So it was a very tricky day for him. I mean, he should have rejoiced at the victory of his team. And at the same time, a personal mistake or some misjudgment by whoever he was, put him in a strange position. He made it clear, that he had been hired on this Tour de France to be the right-hand man to Steven Kruijswijk. And, let's listen to what he had to say. And you'll see that you'll hear the spirit is in.
for us at least, it's been a really great first 10 days. Physically, it hasn't been too tough compared to, say, the 10 days of maybe the Giro last year or something compared to that. So I think everyone's in pretty good spirits. The sun's out. It's a nice sprint day, but the mountains are coming, so that will change everything. My personal ambition is probably more towards the Vuelta for my own results, where I'll be riding for myself. But I knew already for 6 months I was coming here to help, and that's not going to change. And I was prepared for that, and I had some nice chances in Paris-Nice and California, so I got to take those. I'll go again in the Vuelta for my own result as well. So you got to give and take on a team like this.
It must have been a strange feeling, George, on that day, because your teammate won the stage, but I mean, we know what happened. So it must have been a strange feeling in your head at the time.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to be the guy that's not happy for your team. So in the end, it was a really nice day. And a lot of personal frustration, but there's no place for that at the tour, I think, you know.
You kind of become the ideal Gregario now, in a way.
Yeah, it's a luxury position to have a guy like me just being a helper. I think not many teams have that advantage. So
it was interesting watching the reaction to what happened with Bennett a couple of days ago. First of all, people blamed Jumbo-Visma for sending fourth overall rider back to get bottles, and were asking, were the guys in the team car the same as at the Giro when they had to stop for a wee? And that was a day when Primoz Roglic needed help that wasn't available from the team car. No, they're not the same sports directors here. It's a different crew. But Bennett volunteered to do some teamwork, and I mean, if he's here to work for Steven Krausreich, and while it would have been very handy to have somebody high up on the overall, so you've got two people to worry about and you could maybe switch strategies if need be, you can't criticise a rider for trying to do work for the team. I mean, he tried to do something to help everybody out, and it backfired because of circumstances. But that, you know, it's a cliche, but that is bike racing.
But, you know, he's doing a good job for the team, or a better job for the team if he's fourth overall, you know, no matter what his job is. And so his disappointment is understandable. They had a good day, though. Apart from Wout van Aert winning, Steven Krauswijk was in that first echelon, so they had a really good day. Apart from that, you can understand his disappointment. I was quite surprised in a way to hear him almost, you know, wishing the tour away, talking down the next couple of weeks, and saying that Vuelta will now be his focus.
Because he put himself in a trap by losing that much time. You could, in terms of strategy, you could think, oh, that's great, and you know, the question was asked, that's great, you've lost lots of time, so you can go for a stage win. And he said, no, I can't. I mean, I'm not free to do that, because I have to protect Steven Kreuzweg's chances, and we've already won enough stages. I mean, you know, we've already won stages, so it's not a priority. His priority will now be to really stay, ahead of Steven Kreuzweg and be the ideal Gregario he's been, unfortunately for him, in that stage.
The chances of him going for a stage win anyway were small, but what he could now do is be in one of those advanced moves where the group goes up the road with a Movistar guy and a Mitchelton Scott guy and George Bennett. He could be of use because he's an excellent climber. He could get time up the road when people aren't going to be looking at him and worrying, because they'll see on the GC, well, he's 9:30 down, so let's just not worry about that. So he still has a big role to play. It may well end up being a blessing in disguise for Jumbo-Visma.
Maybe the problem with Jumbo-Visma is that, and it's been their problem at the Tour in the past, is they didn't make a clear decision on what their ambitions were on the Tour. Well, it paid off. I mean, they won so many stages so far. But, you know, who's the other climber in the team apart from Kreuzweg? Who is going to help Kreuzweg in the mountain apart from Bennett, you know?
Laurence de Plus is good. He can be good. I mean, he would have been good, I think, at the Giro had he not got ill after I interviewed him and kept him
Lionel,
out in the cold.
Lionel made him ill on day one, unfortunately.
The thing is, this was interesting, and we'll hear from Daryl Impey in the third part. In the exciting outside the team bus.
Oh, you gave away the name of the...
Well, Richard ruined Tale of the Etape. I've ruined outside the team bus. I was surprised, more surprised than the two of you, that Impey was in that break the other day from which he won the stage. And I drew the comparison between Team Ineos, Sky as they were, and every other team, in that Ineos do not participate in anything other than trying to win the Tour de France. They just don't get involved. And Francois, you made the point about, you know, momentum and confidence, and if you win a stage you can take the pressure off Adam Yates, which, you know, and I think there's something in that. There's, if Kruiswijk is in a position third, fourth overall, that would make an absolutely excellent tour for Jumbo-Visma, given all the stages that they've won so far. So you have to come away from the tour with something. And Jumbo-Visma are already in credit before the proper part of Kruiswijk's race starts.
Well, another rider you spoke to this morning, Francois, Zandro Muris, the rider on Wanty Groupe Gobert, who's having a really great tour. In fact, he moved up a position today overall to 18th overall, but he's been very consistent in the stages. Before we do, just another little bit of business from today. Nairo Quintana was caught up in a crash, had finished with a cut arm, according to our colleague Television's Daniel Freib. Giulio Ciccone was taken away to hospital for checks after his crash. Hopefully he's okay, because he's done a lot to light up this tour so far. And Lionel, just to pick up on a point you were making about Team Ineos not participating in breaks, the other team that you could say that of this tour is Astana. I spoke to their sports director Lars Michelsen this morning, and I get the sense that that for a team that's been on fire all year and won so many races and so many different races and not won any races with sprinters, and brought a real strong and informed team to the tour, they've not done anything so far. Now, that might change, but there's a sense of unhappiness in that team, I think, that you pick up on. There's rumours about Jakob Fuglsang moving on, perhaps the Movistar. He certainly appears to be leaving Astana after a long time there. Magnus Cort as well, I think, is going to EF Education first. So it's strange, because the team that, you know, a team that's been on fire all year, they brought a team to the tour where there seemed to be kind of loose threads.
Well, a little birdie told me that after Fuglsang got caught out in the crosswinds on Monday, Alexandra Vinokourov, who's the kind of boss of the team, gave the sports directors the hairdryer treatment on the phone, because they couldn't understand why they had cocked it up so badly. And it was interesting, our Danish colleague, who we'll hear from in an episode of Kilometre Zero tomorrow on the subject of Jakob Fuglsang, said that he was surprised that Fuglsang kind of took sole responsibility for being caught out and was allowed to do so by the team. It wasn't like Lars Michelsen and Dmitry Fofanov were stepping forward to say, no, as a team we got that wrong. And I think when things start to go wrong in the Tour de France, you really see who is kind of grown up enough to take collective responsibility and who tries to pin the blame on one individual. And I think, you know, EF Education First had an absolute shocker in the crosswinds, didn't they? They were right in position A 1 minute, and then they were out the back the next minute, and it was hard to work out exactly what had gone wrong. They had a debrief, and that collective kind of catastrophe brought them close together. And and it's really interesting to see how teams react to adversity as well as success.
But for us tonight, it was it's an interesting thing. I was thinking until these last couple of days that they were holding back for the mountains, you know, and waiting for the real action to start. But now it seems they're holding back because the future of the team is pretty, we don't know. I mean, what's going to happen? And especially Jakob Fuglsang, he seems to be, he crashed, he lost time. You talk to him in the morning, he seems to be all right about it all. And in the same time, you hear the rumors around the peloton that is, you know, he's kind of going to every team. I mean, his agent is going to run every team to try and sell him for next season. And what I heard, I mean, we heard rumored about Movistar and other teams. And the problem is, apparently, he's requesting €2 million in salaries, which is a little bit too much for a 34-year-old rider. So maybe Astana is kind of falling apart because they're already. I mean, you know, the big bargaining of the cycling mercato is that work. Who knows?
Well, I mean, I interviewed Phil Tsang on the rest day. He was very, very relaxed. As Lionel says, we'll hear from him in tomorrow's Kilometer Zero, you know, because he's been the story of the season, really, his transformation from being a nearly man into a winner and, you know, week-long stage races, monuments like Liège-Bastogne-Liège. He's had an incredible season, and I was keen to understand what exactly had gone right for him.
Just to pick up on something Francois said there, it always strikes me that it's relatively easy to ride the perfect Tour de France until it matters, and then when it matters and something unpredictable happens, that's the test. And we saw that on Monday in the crosswinds, and it was a remarkable, really, how many people knew the crosswinds were going to happen. I mean, EF Education First, for example, Andreas Klier is captain crosswinds, and he said to the riders, right, what kilometre 177 or wherever it was, that's the moment to go to the front. They did that, but then collectively kind of lost confidence a little bit and thought, well, the wind's not blowing strongly enough. We heard Oliver Naarson say that, you know, in the Tour de France, you need it to really be blowing a hoolie, as you'd say up in Scotland, Rich. And they weren't sure, and they lost confidence, and, oh, should we press on? They backed off, and then it kicked off under pressure from De Koenig Quickstep. So, you know, you have to totally commit, totally buy in, and totally take that chance, and it's so easy not to do that, I think.
The only thing I can compare Nechelon to is media scrum. When you're a journalist and you're trying to get as close as possible to the rider you want to interview, that it's the same thing. If you miss the opportunity, if you miss the opening, it's finished. You won't hear anything. Your phone or your mic won't get any near the mouth of the guy, and that's it. I mean, experience is important there.
Well, you got pretty close to Zandro Maurice this morning at the start.
Let's hear
from him now.
I'm with Andrew Marissa. One of the surprises of this start of the tour, I mean, we've seen you near the top almost every day. Your GC position is quite good. So what do you think of it?
I surprised myself a little bit. It's my first tour, so I knew I was ready for the tour, but for the three top 10 places, I didn't know. So IGC is good for so far, and we will see what we can do after tomorrow. But I look day by day, and I know maybe one day I will have a bad day. But until now, it's very good. So I hope I'm good to recover after the rest day yesterday. So we will see.
Because you've been doing all right on every kind of terrain as well. I mean, on the flat, on the bumpy stages, and even on La Planche de Bellefille.
Yeah, I know I'm not a specialist in one special thing, but I can do everything a little bit. So that's good. It's good that I can do it like this, because then you can do results on different kind of stages, and in a stage race, it's very important. So yeah, it's good. Yeah.
What's your ambition now, really?
Yeah, I think I will look if I lose time or not tomorrow, and if I lose time, I will go for a stage win, maybe in a breakaway, and after when I don't lose time tomorrow, I save my energy and save so long as possible. Maybe I want to do a good TT also. And when I lose there a lot of time, after I go for some stage, for some breakaways.
Where do you see yourself in the big mountains, you know, when you get to high altitude?
I don't know. We will see. I don't put pressure on myself. The team don't put pressure on me, and I will see.
The cycling podcast at the 2019 Tour de France is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for their support of the cycling podcast. Long standing now, since 2016, we've been backed by Science and Sport. And you can get 25% off all your Science and Sport products at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. SISCP25. Now, a reminder that Science and Sport are exclusive nutrition providers to Team Ineos, and they have an incredible prize to give away: a day in the Team Ineos team car at either the Vuelta or the Tour of Britain. Some great runners-up prize as well, but the main prize includes two nights accommodation, transport, and £400 spending money. Go to scienceandsport.com/signup. That's scienceandsport.com/signup.
Outside the team bus, with
Daryl and Pimmington Scott.
Now, Daryl, yesterday was the rest day and you had a visit from your family. How much of a boost to morale is that when your family are able to come in for a day or so?
It's kind of feel like the tour started again, so it's been nice. It was a nice surprise they weren't due to come, so a surprise visit always lifts your morale. So, yeah, I feel good. I feel I had a nice day yesterday. It was kind of feel recharged, so, yeah, ready for it.
Where have they come from? Do they live far away? I guess you don't live in France, do you?
No, we're in Girona in Spain, so it was probably about a 4.5-hour drive, so yeah.
And I mean, three young children, not normally the sort of thing you associate with a restful, relaxing day. Quite full on it can be, I guess.
Not really. I think, you know, it's... I'm used to having kids now, so we had lots of fun there, sticking the stickers in the books and things like that. So I was quite chilled and relaxed, and you never think that your family's a hassle. So no, it was fantastic to have them here, and wouldn't have had it any other way.
Is that the Tour de France sticker book? Have they got Daryl Impey yet?
They've got everyone, I think. So I spent the whole day yesterday sticking stickers. So no, they've had a great time, and. I think they're pretty stoked when they saw me in there as well.
And what about your stage win the other day? I mean, I was just thinking from the perspective of a team that has someone trying to go for a high overall position. It's quite surprising that you went in the break. What was the thinking behind that?
Look, there was only probably a few opportunities for a guy like me and Matteo here. So, you know, the rest of the time we know our job is to work for Adam. But it was really a day where we knew we'd have most of the team around Adam anyway. It was the day that they would let the breakaway go probably. So, you know, this is Tour de France. It's you take any opportunity you can. So, you know, and now the morale's lifted with the boys. It was a worthwhile day. And, you know, the team didn't expend any energy. It was only really me, so it was we got a nice reward for that.
Talking of expending energy, was it as deliberate as it looked that you took it easier on the steep section at the bottom of that final climb and then made your move a little bit later on? Was that as calculated as it appeared on the TV?
Sure, that's how I've always ridden most of the climbs. You sit in Wollongong and down under, you know, it's a strength that I have in the final part. If I ride it smart, I ride to my strengths, as well as like guys like Tate, you know, they ride to their strengths. So it's just about trying to have faith in yourself and not get carried away with what everyone else is doing.
And when it was just you and Tish Benoot, I mean, again, from the position of an observer, we would think Daryl Impey would be quicker than Tish Benoot in a finish, but when you're in that position, I guess it's not as easy, it's not as straightforward. What was going through your mind?
It's never easy, you know, especially that position. You know, we had really done a lot of work all day, we were both tired, and yeah, I haven't actually had a sprint really against Tish too much. You know, he races a completely kind of different program to what I do. So it was a little bit of the unknown. But I kind of just knew that this was the opportunity. You know, if I'd waited for Steven and asked him to come back and have a few extra sprinters, guys that are pretty fast and strong in that group. So I decided that it was now or never, and roll the dice.
You had the yellow jersey a few years ago. You've now got a stage win. In the sticker book of the Tour de France, you've completed a set, I guess.
Sure. That's, you know, the stage win was, you know, the yellow jersey was obviously a magical moment, but still people asked, have you ever won a stage? So, 7 years of trying, and this is the year that I got it. And, it's just been fantastic, you know, the support from back home and actually everywhere. It's been amazing.
When was the closest before you came to winning?
Closest was 2016. I was second to Steve Cummings in a pretty difficult stage. It was a stage that was pretty much not made for me, but I had an incredible day. It was just that Steve Cummings was so strong.
Well, that was Daryl Impey, stage winner from a few days ago.
There's been a lot of speculation about what is the theme that links the victims of Outside the Team Bus?
A lot of speculation.
There's been some speculation on our Facebook page from people wondering what joins them all together, because I have interviewed quite a few national champions. But there is no theme. It's a combination of...
Early doors, they all had formerly ridden for Axel Merckx's development team.
That's true. There are a lot of people who've either riding their first tour or national champions or, you know, but really it's an attempt to just try to hear a voice from inside each team.
It's just people who will speak to you, isn't it, Lionel?
Yeah, which, I mean, that narrows it down a lot.
It does.
speaking of which, and not to make light of Nicky Terpstra's abandon whatsoever, but that does leave us with no true English speakers in the Total Direct Energy team. Lilian Calmejean speaks very good English, but is reluctant to do so, particularly at the Tour de France. Fair enough. So, Francois, we may have to draft you in for an episode of Outside the Team Bus later in the race.
I'd love to do that. You know, it's been actually my dream since the start of the tour to be involved in that.
Would that be a career highlight, Francois?
Well, the entertainment has kicked off in the square behind us, but we should look ahead a little bit to tomorrow's stage, the first stage in the Pyrenees.
Yeah, on Total Direct Energy, briefly, Nicolo Bonifazio, their sprinter, he collided with a mobile phone in the finishing straight today. I don't know if you spotted that, but he was well positioned and he looked pretty good. He was. He could see him lining out himself up, and he was well positioned. I don't know if he'd have won. He wouldn't necessarily have won, but he'd have been up there when he collided with a spectator's mobile phone. Oh. The phone was a casualty, but a very unfortunate thing to happen in the finishing straight. And be worth trying to catch up with him to, you know, find out what impact that had on his sprint. The noise is really kicking off, so we should probably wrap things up quite soon, but we are looking ahead to a Pyrenean stage tomorrow, aren't we?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to ask Francois, just at the couple of tables near us here, there are a couple of young men sporting very similar moustache and beard arrangements to Julian Alaphilippe. Is this an indication that Alaphilippe
fever?
Yeah. Taking over France?
I don't think so. I think Alaphilippe is just a young guy who is, you know, conscious of his appearance. We tend to forget, you know, sometimes that riders are just, you know, young guys from 25 to 35 and it's just following the fashion. Romain Bardet is a keen, you know, dedicated follower of fashion, as they said in my day. So,
well, when you reach our age, you've pretty much given up, eh?
Yeah, I'm not following fashion anymore. Fashion's following me, Francois.
But the thing is, yeah, there's one thing about Alaphilippe's look. It's kind of the D'Artagnan look, you know, like the musketeer, the swashbuckling.
Well, it's buccaneer. The way he rides as well, isn't it? You can imagine him drawing a sword and, you know, Zorro-like,
yeah, exactly.
Almost.
Yeah, that's part of it. And you know, looking ahead to tomorrow, obviously. The main question of the tour is who's going to win it, and of course, I mean, there's been lots of, but
the machine says Bernal, by the way, the NTT machine.
Yeah, well, everybody,
but
the thing is, as we're talking about tomorrow, the question is obviously, can Julien Alaphilippe keep the jersey? How long can he keep it? Can he keep it tomorrow? Can he keep it after the time trial in Pau? And will the Tourmalet, you know, really put an end to his? Let's face it, it's a beautiful moment for France, for you know, France on holidays, the France of July. All the young kids. I remember being a young kid myself, watching the tour every day before going to the beach or after or coming back from the beach. And for all those kids, and hopefully kids all over the place. I mean, Julien Alaphilippe was. You know, he's what a nice guy to look up to. So tomorrow, I think he'll keep it, to be honest.
I think he'll keep it.
Absolutely, tomorrow. I think he'll keep it in the time trial as well. There was a very similar length time trial in the Dauphiné when he was seventh. The Tourmalet, I would think he would lose it there, but it could be close. He could have one of those yellow jersey-powered days, and 1:12 to Geraint Thomas is not a gimme. So who knows? He won't win the Tour, I don't think, Alaphilippe, but he could very possibly still be in yellow after the Tourmalet, but then I think maybe on the climb after Foix. Although then you start to think, well, that might be a climb that would suit Alaphilippe more than Thomas. Who knows?
even if he does a 2011 Tommy Vogler kind of tour, Thomas Vogler was doing the tour of a lifetime. I think Alaphilippe is probably a better rider than Vogler ever was, and a much more versatile rider as well. But in the top five in Paris, no, I not only do I not believe it, but Julien Alaphilippe himself said it repeatedly. There is no way I'm going to, you know, be, well, I mean, going for the GC in the last week.
Well, he hasn't prepared for it either, has he? He's not done the sort of, you know, the altitude camps and preparation that you really need to. He's been winning races since January, so it seems unlikely. Whereas, you know, we've talked a lot about Geraint Thomas's lack of racing, but that could play in his favour that he's, you know, he's been able to prepare for the tour properly and not come in over race as Alaphilippe maybe is. And maybe Jakob Fuglsang as well, who knows. Speaking of Fuglsang, episode of Kilometre Zero tomorrow, sponsored by Hansgrohe. Look out for that. It's got an interview with Fuglsang in it, and it's accompanied by a magnificent image of Fuglsang taken by my brother Robin.
Oh, how nice.
Yes, so look out for that. It's a really lovely picture. It's not a new picture, but it's such a good picture that I was looking for an excuse to use it again, so look out for that. And we've got other Kilometre Zeros lined up. Today's was on our rest day, wasn't it? A little behind the scenes look at what we got up to on the rest day. And yeah, we'll be back tomorrow night with the discussion of the first Pyrenean stage.
Yeah, stage 12 tomorrow, the first Pyrenean stage, the first kind of true sortie into the proper mountains. I'm not saying that the stage to La Planche de Belleville was flat in any way, but the Alps and the Pyrenees are the ones that really kind of resonate with us. And for the first time in many years, we don't truly know what's going to happen. We don't know who the tour winner will be. We don't think that the yellow jersey is just going to be held all the way from here to Paris. And that's quite an unusual scenario for us. So looking forward to it.
Looking forward to it. Before we go, remember, you can stand a chance of winning the Austin Cycles Atto folding bike, which I've been darting around on. It's a beautiful carbon fibre machine worth £2,750. Go to thecyclingpodcast.com, sign up to our newsletter, and if you get the newsletter, if you're already a subscriber to the newsletter, click on the link to leave the reason why you should win the bike, and I'll read out a couple more of those tomorrow night. Before we go, we should say thanks to a few more friends of the podcast. Thank you very much indeed to Paul Harrington, Russell Walmsley, Neil Baker, Katie Priester, Andres Hanicum, and Stephen Gregg.
A big thank you to Richard Meaney, Jonathan Dennis.
Richard Meaney by name, but not by nature,
well,
obviously.
I was going to call you Richard Meaney. Jonathan Dennis, Damon Ogan, Greg Power, Christine Parkinson, and Stephen Wales.
And obviously, un grand merci à Jack Amshow and Greg Renhiller. Also, a grand merci à Matthew Whittington, Mark Ramsey, Bradley Thorson, Tan Golub, Stuart Hamilton, Charles Hain, Daniel Stickland, and Andrew Moda.
Andrew McDade. Yeah. Thank you to all of those people.
Sorry
Thank you.
To the-